always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
We should appease the Democrats and put the bill to a vote instead of allowing them to filibuster and they could filibuster, but ultimately we even had an agreement with prior to going to this that we had the votes for the PQ, and then it was quite evident that everybody got weak-kneed and they lost their backbone and allowed the Democrats yet again to be victorious and to show who's actually running the Missouri Senate, which it is very by the vote count a super minority, but in reality they are part of the majority in the uniparty, and that's what was on full display these past few days. They rule the chamber.
That's Missouri State Senator Rick Bratton, chairman of the Missouri Freedom Caucus, and he was talking about the last few days of the session. Thankfully, the Missouri legislature is out of session now. Freedoms, liberties, and pocketbooks safe once again. I'm going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the session. There were some of each, definitely for sure, in the speaker's stump speech this afternoon. I'm Tim Jones. Chris Arps here as well. Producer Joey V. Chris got a little update on a positive update on the incident involving Scottie Scheffler, the world's number one golfer. There is a tournament going on right now, a PGA tournament called the PGA Championship. It's being played at Valhalla, which is in Louisville, Kentucky. I've actually played that course. My brother lives in Louisville. Scottie Scheffler was arrested this morning in regards to a traffic incident. There was unfortunately not involving Scottie Scheffler. Earlier in the morning, there was a horrible crash. Unfortunately, there was a fatality. It's horrible. Very sad. Scottie Scheffler was in the traffic that resulted from that, probably then running late, tried to go around some folks who were trying to direct. The whole scene apparently was chaotic. And Scottie Scheffler drove one way that apparently the police didn't want him to drive, and that resulted in a police officer literally grabbing onto his car, and mayhem ensued. Scottie Scheffler was arrested, charged with all kinds of charges. Kind of ridiculous. Here is the statement from Scottie Scheffler. He is praising the police for being our protectors, and he described his interactions with them in custody as being absolutely fine. There is a gentleman and a scholar. He said the whole thing was an understanding. I was rattled. It was all very confusing. There was a lot of miscommunication. He said the officers were extremely kind to me. They made me feel at ease. They even were joking with me, had some nice chats with them. They were fantastic. The governor and the mayor of Louisville came out. The governor of Kentucky, the mayor of Louisville came out, made some comments to the extent of, we hope all this gets sorted out. There was probably a huge misunderstanding there, in light of the fatality that was not involving Scottie. I'm sure the scene was absolutely chaotic and people were very much on edge. So that's the latest.
He's got a very good PR person.
And yeah, he said, Scottie said, the officer that took me to the jail was very kind. He was great. We had a nice chat in the car that really helped calm me down. I was sitting there waiting to go in, and I actually asked him, can you just come and hang out with me for a few minutes? Because I have no idea, honestly, what I've gotten myself involved in. So here's some other good news. He was brought back to the, he was released. He was brought back to the tournament. He had a great day on the course, ripped off a ton of birdies, and he is now second after the second round.
Good
so
deal.
Hopefully this will all get sorted out. But yeah, that kind of made national news. We talked with Ashley Hayek in the first segment, and if you missed that, that was a great discussion, Chris, where we talked about the other controversy in the sports world of KC Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker following his comments, his pro-family values comments at a commencement speech at Benedictine. All of our podcasts are available. Joey's going to have them up before we head out to the weekend. Wherever you may find podcasts, we'd love for you to download the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show and listen to it throughout the weekend, any of the episodes you may have missed over the week.
And this is really something the NFL doesn't need after the Colin Kaepernick kneel down for the national anthem controversy. They've just gotten the fans back the last couple of seasons. And something like this is just an unnecessary, unforced error to me. This is his beliefs. He's not on company time. He's expressing his beliefs. We know he's a strong Catholic. Why would you even wade into this controversy? I don't know. Leave it alone.
You would think that would have been the wisest move given their recent experiences on the other side of the coin. At 5:25 today, I'm sure we will have a fascinating discussion, because we always do, with one of our faves from the Show Me Institute. Patrick Tuohy is going to join us. He's a senior fellow at the Show Me Institute. We're going to talk about the latest on the St. Louis earnings tax lawsuit. Many believe the St. Louis earnings tax, as applied especially to workers who work from home, is completely and utterly unconstitutional. So we'll get an update on that and the risks of making policing ideological, as AOC and the squad have as well. At 5:45, speaking of AOC, Chris, we're going to talk about the WWE match that erupted in Congress this week between MTG and AOC.
Absolutely crazy. I didn't know AOC had had a little ghetto into her. She got a little street there on the House floor. So we'll discuss that, and we'll play that audio at 5:45. Unbelievable to see what the Congress has devolved into.
Like you suggested earlier, you know what we should do? We should do something for charity here. We can put these two in a cage match or a boxing
ring. That's not what I suggest.
Or I'm not going to go there, but...
That wasn't my suggestion.
Something about t-shirts and water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Pool.
Oil. Maybe do something where we can turn, we can get lemonade from lemons here. In another national story that we've touched on this week, legal experts are calling Joe Biden's reason for not releasing the secret tapes of his testimony with special counsel Her extremely problematic. Chris, the Biden White House obviously does not want these tapes out for some reason, probably some very good reasons, in the 5 months leading up to the national election.
And I was absolutely screaming. I listened to the MSNBC podcast, the one Kristen Welker used to host before she got the big job. I listened to that on my way home, and they were talking about this, Tim, the tape not being released. And it was just absolutely sickening. I was screaming, literally screaming at my radio, because the host and all of the Democrats apologists were saying, well, I don't know why the Republicans are making such a big deal about wanting the audio tape. We have the transcript. Everyone's read the transcript. What's the big deal? Why do we need the tapes? And it's like, you guys just need to quit. You know, there's a big difference between reading somebody's words on a piece of paper and actually hearing Joe Biden stumbling over his words, not knowing when his son died, not knowing simple dates. There's a big difference between reading that and hearing that, and they know that. And it was just so sickening to hear them just try to say this is just all about nothing. We have the transcript.
Flip test this one. Donald Trump sits down in a closed door testimonial hearing with Merrick Garland, and there's allegations that some really bad stuff came out during the course of that interview. The media would be screaming from the mountaintops, Chris, that video be released, right?
Yeah. And I mean, and I was thinking about this when I was listening to this. You know, media, you could gain so much of your credibility back if, when a situation like this is so obvious, you just admit the truth. Just say, look, we all know that President Biden is having cognitive issues sometimes. Sometimes he's not on his game. Sometimes he looks aloof and lost. It is said, and Robert Hur said that during the testimony, that Joe Biden looked like he was lost, and they don't want that out. And it makes the president look bad, period. Mm-hmm. Just say that. Mm-hmm. Just say that instead of trying to act like we're a bunch of fools and saying, well, the transcript's already been released. Why do we need to hear the audio? Mm-hmm. Just tell the truth.
Right. Just be honest about it.
Just be honest. You don't know why.
You don't want to hurt Biden's reelection chances. Because none of you are objective journalists anymore. Everybody's in the tank. And at least conservative commentators admit when they're commenting. I hear conservatives all the time say, I'm not a news person. I'm a commentator. You know, Chris and I try to report you the news, but we're not journalists. We're commentators. We admit that. CNN pretends to be news people and journalists when they're just commentating as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely sickening. And it goes back to what we've talked about the last couple of weeks, where reporters now have gone from asking questions and being unbiased to actually asking questions and also being fact checkers at the same time. It's annoying as hell watching them do that because they don't do it with Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I got a little update on the Harrison Butker story. A couple of his former teammates have come out in his defense.
Good deal.
And those would include his teammate Chris Jones and former wide receiver Cole Beasley. Jones and Beasley were two of the few players in the league or related to the NFL to express support. Jones said, "I love you." By the way, Harrison's Twitter handle is ButtKicker7. So he says, "I love you, ButtKicker7, my brother." Jones wrote in an X response to a petition going around. When an X user wondered whether Jones would delete the post, the defensive tackle said, negative. Beasley, who retired from the NFL last season after a short stint with the Giants, wrote that he was with the Chiefs kicker. So there you go. You got a few brave NFL folks attached to the NFL who are coming out in favor of Harrison Butker.
And again, why do we have to say that is brave to come out
right
for traditional family values? Take care of your kids, women, your life is not revolve around how many titles and how high you've climbed up the corporate ladder, that staying at home and raising children is just as honorable and just as fulfilling.
Could not agree with you more. All right, we're going to get to Patrick Tuohy in just a moment here from the Show Me Institute to talk about the latest on the St. Louis earnings tax lawsuit and the risks of making policing ideological, defund the police, etc. But in the meantime, let's talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of the recently concluded session of the Missouri General Assembly.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the Speaker's Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
I, like all of you who are involved in politics and public policy in the state of Missouri, are probably breathing a sigh of relief that the Missouri legislature has gaveled out for the rest of the year. They will not have any sessions the rest of this year unless there is something, I think, really critical that comes up. I don't see any special sessions coming down the pike, and that's probably a good thing because in my 20-plus years of being in and around the Missouri General Assembly and the sessions, I have never witnessed a session that was fraught with more acrimony. I've never seen people put personality over good public policy like I did this year. Now, despite all of that, there was a lot of good, there was some bad, and there was one big ugly that came out of this year's legislative session. I'm going to detail those for you right now. Let's talk about the one and only thing that our legislature actually is supposed to do every year that they constitutionally have to do. Many of you wish they would just do this and go home, and that is to craft the budget for the next fiscal year. Every single year, the General Assembly goes into session and they appropriate tens of billions of dollars. I can't believe I'm saying that because when I started in the General Assembly, hey, it wasn't the Stone Age. All you people out there are calling me crazy old man Jones. When I entered the General Assembly in my 30s, not the 1930s, in the mid 2000s, it was 2007. Our budget was hovering at around $21, $22 billion, all in, everything. Federal, state, general revenue, grants, funding, whatever. In 2014, when I left the General Assembly, it had ticked up a little bit. We had gone through a recession. We had bounced back. We had some lean times. We had some good times. It didn't grow that much in the 8 years I was there. Any growth in government is bad. I agree. But it was below $27 billion. That was not even hardly 10 years ago, right around 10 years ago. 10 years later, our budget has ballooned from under $27 billion to over $50 billion. Our population hasn't gone up that much. Our cost of living hasn't gone up that much. Inflation and taxes probably have. But that is a ridiculously large growth in government for a state that has experienced very little population growth. What are we all getting? What are we all getting for that massive amount of extra governmental spending? Well, a lot of it was juiced by the Biden administration, by the Biden bucks and the COVID cash. This year, though, I want to give huge congrats and kudos to Cody Smith, House Budget Chairman, member of the Missouri Freedom Caucus, and all the work that he did in the budget process. Cody Smith is one of those quiet legislators who goes about his duty and his tasks. He's not a bomb thrower. He just is a good, solid fiscal hawk. Every year, Cody has trialed to dial the budget back, whereas Lincoln Huff, one of the biggest liberal Republican spenders I've ever laid eyes on, ratchets up the budget to higher levels. This year, because of a lot of different parliamentary and procedural goofs and gaffes and stumbles, believe it or not, Cody Smith and the House rolled the Senate and their big spending ways. And our budget going into next year, for the first time since 2009, is lower than the budget the year before. That is remarkable. It's still way too much money. I heard Brenda Talent talking about this morning on Vic Porcelli's show. I couldn't agree with Brenda more. She said it's still way too much money, but at least it's a step in the right direction. Cody Smith is helping to carry over nearly $2 billion to the bottom line next year. Less money in government, folks, means more money in your pocketbook. So I'll give that a big giant green check mark under budget reform. School choice, we've talked about this a lot. The school choice bill got across the finish line. It shouldn't be a heavy lift in a supermajority Republican legislature, but it is. That is going to benefit all Missourians. That is not a partisan issue. That is an issue by which all Missourians can benefit. Money will start to follow, not entirely, but more students than systems. The teachers' unions, the uber lunatic left, was infuriated that this bill got across the finish line, which means it's good for parents and kids. Electoral reform. Chris and I just talked about this in the last segment. We're really happy that SJR 78, Senator Ben Brown, and in the House, Ben Baker's bill, that got across the finish line, protecting Missourians from the evils and the horrors of ranked choice voting. If we all vote on that, that's a proposal that we all get to vote on. If we all vote on that, we'll also protect the Missouri electoral system from non-citizens voting, something that Becky and Chris Harps have been working on for many years. That's another big success. The landfill bill, I'm not going to go into detail on this. Patrick Toohey probably knows all about this. This was a controversy on the western side of the state. It had been kind of slowing down the legislature for years. That problem was solved. How about senior citizen property tax relief? Missouri State Representative Ben Keithley from the Chesterfield region, he got that bill across the finish line, and he was able to carry a bill across the finish line to prohibit taxation on streaming services. So two big bills there for Uber legislator Ben Keithley. And finally, Planned Parenthood was defunded. Yes, Planned Parenthood was finally defunded. That went into the statute books as well. The governor has signed that bill. The ugly. Unfortunately, there were some very complicated bills that I don't know that legislators completely understood. I tried to explain them to them. But we expanded the 340B program. That's a federal program that Glenn Youngkin vetoed a similar bill in Virginia on. Many are arguing that expands health care services to illegal immigrants and to abortion providers. And unfortunately, that bill was passed, along with a bill that will not fix our pension system, but was portrayed at. They're going to add fines and fees, which is never a good idea. So, you know, there was some swamp sludge and some junk there as well. The one big, bad, ugly, IP reform did not make it across the finish line. Can you believe it? 7 years in a row. This is supposed to be the number one priority of the Missouri Republican Party, the grassroots, establishment Republicans, conservative Republicans, all Republicans, and everybody in between. It was sent back to the Senate. 3 weeks to go. One vote was the only thing needed. Everybody believes, including many of the people working on this inside the dome, that they had the votes to carry this across the finish line. Senator Caleb Rowden ended session today with 8 hours to go. He gaveled in and gaveled out, said he was giving up. He was killing IP reform. So the floor leader, Cindy O'Loughlin, did not help, and the bill handler, Mary Elizabeth Coleman, sending that bill to conference 2 days ago, that proved what I predicted. It was the death knell for that bill. There's too many people involved in the initiative petition industry that apparently don't want this system to change. It's a real shame, because that means abortion is coming down the pike. This was the Hail Mary. The Hail Mary was dropped. So now, folks, we're going to have to get all out in the streets and try to defeat this abortion IP before it's enshrined in our Constitution. We're going to have to do something about this IP process. The left is just circumventing the legislature every single year with every single crazy cockamamie idea, Medicaid expansion to abortion, and everything in between. Only 21 states have a process like this. We're the worst. We need to change it. They've tried for 7 years and failed. You got to start wondering, what's the Republican supermajority for? And that's the stump speech for today. The good, the bad, and the one ugly. There you have it.
Did Caleb Rowden and Mary Elizabeth Coleman kill the IP reform, or did the senators that couldn't get to 18 kill the IP reform bill?
Caleb Rowden killed IP reform. It's obvious. I believe that he was doing the bidding of the Arnold Foundation, the realtors. He took $200,000 from the Wash U Super PAC, which is pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. These people do not want the IP process to change. He has been in a position of power for 4 years. And for 4 years, they've killed it. I believe they had. And look, if you don't have 18 votes on this and you call it your number one priority, you're lying to yourself. There's 24 Republicans. Chris, they all say they're pro-life. Everybody knew what would happen if this fails. If this fails, that means abortion is on the ballot this November. They failed to get this across the finish line. Caleb did not have session today. He didn't even try. He went in, called the roll, and gaveled out at 10:02 a.m. So there you go. There's your answer. You know, I put it on. I put it in his hands. All right, Chris, it's 5:25. That means we got to get to our final guest of the week on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp show. But we've got two.
Pretty dramatic when you put it
that
way.
But we've got two. It's kind of wild.
Final guest of the week.
Go nowhere. You're going to want to hear Patrick Toohey. We're going to shift gears quite a bit. We're going to talk about the St. Louis City earnings tax lawsuit and making policing ideological. And then Chris has got an update on the other cage match of the week, MTG versus AOC. Two jam-packed segments you will not want to miss on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Mingling with supporters and exchanging hugs, St. Louis's first black female mayor announced she's ready to serve a second term. This, as U.S. Census Bureau estimates, show the city lost some 4,400 people last year, the biggest population decline in the country.
What are we doing to get people back to the city and keep them here?
Well, the population has been sliding in St. Louis since the 1950s, so it didn't start under my administration or even previous administrations.
She went on to tell me it can be done by investing in communities that have been historically neglected.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Well, there you go, Chris. Tashara Jones commenting on a KSDK story, I believe, earlier this week that St. Louis continues to bleed people. One of the cities in the city in the country that's apparently suffered some of the worst population loss. And she's running for a second term. So more of the same.
Typical Democratic politician response. Not my fault.
Not my fault. Meanwhile, not my Chris, fault. Not all urban areas are having this kind of decay and degradation. Detroit seeing somewhat of a renaissance. They've actually had population growth. Yeah. I guess they hit rock bottom and St. Louis is not quite there yet.
Detroit did. If you remember, they filed bankruptcy back in the 2000s. There were stories about how they couldn't keep the street lights on in certain parts of Detroit. Entire neighborhoods, you'd see pictures that were absolutely blighted. And Detroit has been a absolute miracle. They have come back. St. Louis should look and see what they've done and try to model it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, indeed. Let's see if our next guest has any answers for all of this urban decay and despair.
And now, a man who comes alive when there's bad public policy in Missouri, Patrick Toohey.
Every day. Well, Patrick, now you're big time. You officially have a theme.
I love the bumper. And knowing that I'm the last guest of the week, I feel like your entire program all week has been leading up to this point.
It has.
It hinges on you. It hinges on you, the success of the show this week.
It has been our friend. It has been our friend. Hey, Patrick, speaking of despair and decay, one of the things that we often argue, and I know you all often argue at the Show Me Institute, is the St. Louis City earnings tax, right? Not every urban area has this type of a tax. And even though it sounds small, 1%, you know, you add up all those 1% and you're talking real money someday soon. And there's been a lawsuit that's been going on. Do give us the update on that and where we're at in this debacle.
Well, Brian Cave, one of the last big companies that still has space in the city of St. Louis, has paid about $375,000 in earnings tax under protest. They say the city acted inappropriately in charging that, and so it's before a judge. But this demonstrates the problem in St. Louis, and everybody knows it, which is the city has to demonstrate that it is a place you want to be, either to live or to work or to visit, and it is failing to do that. And it is paramount that St. Louis realize that the earnings tax, just like it is in Kansas City, is an incentive for people to leave, to give themselves a raise by living and working outside of the city. And then, of course, there are all the other problems, public safety, infrastructure, all the stuff that the city needs to do. And I am frustrated but not surprised to hear your mayor say that she thinks the way out of this is to invest in communities. That means spending money on the people that are still there, when in fact what the city needs to do is demonstrate to people who are not there that they should be living in the city. And you get that not through Stadia and higher taxes and subsidizing amenities. You get that by doing the basics, which is providing for public safety, providing for infrastructure, doing all the things that that people need to feel safe and secure in the city. And again, it's not surprising, but it is so frustrating that nobody seems to learn that very basic lesson.
Patrick, the mayor will say that one thing that she's doing to keep the people safe in the city of St. Louis is reinstituting these red light cameras. That is one of the reasons. She'll also say that she is spending money to help the community by spending $350,000 to loan, quote unquote, people money who have not paid their back taxes. And she has put in a bunch of money into a fund to help people that have been evicted from their apartments or about to be evicted of their apartments fight their landlords. That's what she's spending the RAM settlement money on.
Yeah, again, it's frustrating. Look, anybody who owns a business and even people who don't own a business can appreciate this. When you purchase, let's imagine that you two bought a bar together.
Mm-hmm.
You want to grow the business. You absolutely want to keep the people, your existing patrons who already come to your bar. You want to keep them happy. You want to make sure they don't leave. But your bigger focus is to get more and different people who aren't already your customers to come into that bar. Now, you can say that I want to keep my existing patrons by, you know, serving better beer, serving more beer, having snacks, all sorts of stuff like that. But if you are not working to bring more and different people into your bar, you are just forestalling the time when you will have to close. And so it's the same with St. Louis. It's the same with Kansas City. They have got to demonstrate that they get it, and they've got to demonstrate that St. Louis is open for business, right? That it is a safe and great place to live and work. And anything short of that is just kicking the can down the road and watching your population get to zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll keep monitoring that because this is a big story indeed. Patrick, related story, the risks of making policing ideological is something I know that you have been tracking. We speak with a lot of national experts on this, and unfortunately, St. Louis is literally a chapter in many of these books that folks write about the problems with making policing ideological. What are we talking about first when we're talking about making policing ideological, and why is that a bad idea?
Okay, so first of all, what I love about municipal city politics and policy is that it is absolutely responsive to the numbers, right? You can talk ideology, but ultimately people want to know, are my potholes getting patched? Are the streetlights on? Are the schools good?
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely true with policing. You can position yourself and talk about defunding the police, but ultimately, what you need is a properly funded and efficiently run police force that is able to provide for public safety. And so I urge people on the left and the right, don't get caught up in kind of the big political issues. Focus on making sure your police union is effective. So, for example, oftentimes, and I'm guilty of this, conservatives look at the police as the one public union that they like, and forget that it is, after all, a public union, and forget that they sit down and negotiate contracts, negotiate pensions, negotiate, overtime. And oftentimes they do that in secret. It is not open to the public, certainly. And oftentimes when those negotiations get to the city council or the board of aldermen for approval, it's just an up or down vote. There's no opportunity to make amendments. So cities need to do a better job of of negotiating with the police. There are issues such as qualified immunity, civil asset forfeiture, federal task forces that cities really need to be careful because it can turn the police, I mean, think of Ferguson, for example, it can make the police feel like they're just a revenue enforcement program or that they're kind of like an occupying force. And every police officer will tell you that in order to be effective, they need to have a good relationship with the communities in which they operate. And so there are lots of things that cities can do to make sure their police force is effective and stay away from the hot button ideological political issues like defund, for example.
Speaking with Patrick Tuohy, senior fellow at the Shomi Institute, we're discussing his article in the KC Star, Don't Make Kansas City's Policing Ideological. Here's how to establish two-way trust. Patrick, I think there's one thing I could probably agree with you with most of your article. I didn't have a chance to read all of it. I skimmed it. But one part that I think that could be controversial is where you talk about ending qualified immunity for police. I know a lot of pro-police supporters think that qualified immunity is absolutely necessary for the police to do their job. Explain why you propose ending it.
So qualified immunity is not any law or piece of legislation that was passed by kind of a democratically elected board. This was imposed on us by the court. And what it basically said is that, you know, in order to demonstrate or to win a case alleging that your civil rights have been violated, that you have to demonstrate that that exact circumstance happened before and that the police officers knew about it. And so what happens is courts will openly admit that, yes, your rights were violated. The police acted inappropriately. But because of this particular reading of qualified immunity, you know, your set of circumstances hadn't happened before. And so we're going to give the benefit of the doubt to the police. And by the way, qualified immunity, we talk about it most of the time in relation to police, but it isn't only the police that benefit from it. It is all sorts of civil servants, city employees who may be in a position to violate your civil rights, and you should be able to sue over it. Now, that is not to say that I would encourage people to sue police all the time over all sorts of things. And I don't think that ending qualified immunity would make police more susceptible. We're talking about the real abuse cases, the violations of civil rights. And to kind of support my point, in New York City, which has the largest and the finest police force in the country, when the city ended qualified immunity for city police, the police union sent out a letter to all its members saying, hey, guys, just remember, when you are dealing with people out there, make sure you respect their civil rights. Now, that is something we can all get behind. So I understand that qualified immunity is often, you know, used as an example of protecting the police. There are plenty of other ways to provide, legal protection to police without just jumping to qualified immunity, which again is too broad, too sloppy, and was never anything that elected representatives gave us. It just came from the courts.
Patrick, what other things can cities like St. Louis do to make policing less ideological and to make policing do what it's supposed to do, and that's protect and serve the community?
Yeah, so one of the things that that frustrates me about policing in the United States is civil asset forfeiture. And this gets kind of complicated, but basically what it means is if you're arrested, the police can seize your car. And even if you were never charged with a crime or even never arrested, the city, the civil authorities in your city may sue you civilly in order to take your car. And unfortunately, because it's a civil suit, you as a defendant are not guaranteed any kind of public defense. You don't have a right to not incriminate yourself. And oftentimes, it is more expensive to hire an attorney to get your stuff back than the value of the stuff that was taken. So I would like to see St. Louis and other cities say, look, we're not going to engage in civil asset forfeiture. Again, it's a civil hearing. It's not a criminal case. At the very least, they could say we're not going to do it for values under $5,000. When people defend civil asset forfeiture, they talk about, well, we're doing it to drug kingpins and we're seizing Maseratis and yachts and stuff like that. But most of the time, the value of the things seized are mere hundreds or thousands of dollars. And unfortunately, the police are implicated because although it's a civil lawsuit, the funds that are seized go to benefit the police. And so the police are incentivized to do this type of thing. And again, it's another example of where the police can easily be seen as an occupying force or as a revenue generating service rather than just being there to protect and to serve.
Patrick Toohey, senior fellow at the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. Patrick, thanks for everything. And Chris and I agree, you delivered here as the last guest on Friday.
Wonderful. Well, have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you as well. He is a fantastic guy.
He is.
When we're kind of at the end of the week and we're like, all right, we just got to get through this, Patrick Toohey is a fantastic guest to help us anchor the weekdays.
And he's a columnist for the KC Red Stars. We won't hold that against him.
Maybe he talks some sense into them once in a great while. Well, how about that, folks? It's nearly 5. It's about to become 5:45 in the p.m. Central time zone-wise. We're about to wrap things up, but we're going to turn you over to Larry Connors USA and then to the Rob Carter Show. Yes, 6 live and local shows with Dan Bongino middays. That's why we are the number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk. Chris has got an update on something. I don't know all the details on this, so I'm just as excited, I'm sure you are, to hear all about it. MTG versus AOC. The U.S. House turned into another action. Speaking of Mad Max, another episode of Thunderdome. Chris has got all the details when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show. 101.9 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
As President Biden said during his campaign, no one should be in jail for using or possessing marijuana. That's why in 2022, President Biden requested that DOJ and HHS review how marijuana is scheduled under federal law. Today, the administration is taking a major step toward reclassifying marijuana from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 3 drug under federal law. If finalized, marijuana will no longer hold the higher level classification it currently holds over fentanyl and meth, drugs driving our nation's overdose epidemic.
Sometimes people will open the door for you and leave it open. Sometimes they won't. And then you need to kick that f***ing door down. Excuse my language.
Hi, 50 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and rumors are, Tim, that the vice president led that task force to decriminalize marijuana. I don't know if it's true or not.
Well played.
But those are the rumors that she headed that task force. She volunteered for that. Didn't have to, she's supposed to be the border czar. We've had a lot of trouble getting her down to the border when they said, Kamala, we need you to handle the task force on decriminalizing marijuana. She was all over it. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 5:50. We came in with the great Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train. And Tim, what happened yesterday on the House Oversight Committee was absolutely the crazy train. The House Oversight Committee voted yesterday to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress.
All right.
Because Merrick Garland is refusing to release the audio tape of Joe Biden's testimony before the special counsel. A lot of rigmarole, in Congress. You know, you've been in politics, Tim. Mm-hmm. Sometimes tempers flare. People say things that they may not mean. Well, we had the AOC versus MTG match yesterday. I'm just going to play it and I'll let you hear it for yourself. Marjorie Taylor Greene started it first, cut 7.
I'd like to know if any of the Democrats on this committee are employing Judge Mershon's daughter.
Please tell me what that has to do with Merrick Garland.
Is she a porn star?
Do you know what we're here for? You know we're here about AB.
I don't think you know what you're here for.
Well, you're the one talking about.
I think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
Hold on.
Listen.
Order,
Mr. Chairman.
That's beneath even
your committee.
Order.
I do have a point of order, and I would like to move to take down Ms. Green's words. That is absolutely unacceptable. How dare you attack the physical appearance of another person?
Are your feelings hurt?
Her words down.
Oh, girl,
baby girl.
Oh, really?
Don't even play.
This is like the WWE, man.
AOC trying to get ghetto there. That is unbelievable. Next up, the young woman who said that Marjorie Taylor Greene talked about her eyelashes, she came back with this.
Someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built butch body that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
What now?
Comer's like,
What now?
Poor Comer.
What do you say? Joy?
What now?
I have two hearing aids, and I don't know what that means or something.
I don't know if you noticed it. I have two hearing aids. I'm very deaf. I'm not understanding. Everybody's yelling. I'm doing the best I can.
So she was called MTG.
What now?
MTG was called a bleach blonde, bad built butch body. Boy, that's a lot of B's there.
It's very good alliteration. Bleach blonde,
bad built butch body. Wow.
She's bad built. She's kind of built. You know?
So that was your House of Representatives yesterday, Tim. The representatives of the people making $175,000 a year now. That's what it's.
We're gonna speak up and we're gonna say we're not having that. We're not playing that.
Chris, don't you always feel like it's all just a bunch of acting and we're just watching the play up in D.C., you know?
And it would be even crazier if what we see on TV is not what happens in real life. And a lot of people say there is a uniparty, but we hear a lot of rancor and all of that. What if AOC and MTG were like homegirls when the cameras are off and go have a drink or
like Bugs Bunny and the Roadrunner?
Exactly. After they clock out after their job, they are best buddies.
Yeah, they clock out like the sheepdog and the hen, the fox in the hen house. And I don't know. I think that some of that might be real animosity, but, you know, kind of like the scenes we see a lot from the UK with Parliament or sometimes, in the third world countries and they're brawling, you know, let your emotions.
Man, but beach blonde, built butch boy, and talking about someone's fake eyelashes I don't know if that's necessary, but
let's get back to taxes.
Let's get back to taxes. You know what? I've got some news here. There have been changes in U.S. baby name popularity from 2000 to 2023. Oh. You know what name, Tim, male name has had the largest increase in popularity?
I do not.
Since 2013, it is Theo. Oh. And it's been on up 12 or 13 times since 2013. Theo. Joy, you're in the market for children here in the next few weeks.
Few years
or so. Would you think of naming little Joy Theo? Joy?
Of course. The Bill Cosby impression is still very popular. He hasn't done anything wrong. So, yeah, I just call him little Theo.
Now, where does this come from? I guess this is a millennial thing here. Another popular boy name is Atlas.
Atlas.
Whoa. Do you know any children named Atlas?
Atlas. Like Atlas
he just shrugged. Yeah. He was like, I don't know who that is. We don't even read books anymore. It's funny to name someone after one of the biggest books that ever was invented.
Here's a third one. Largest increase in popularity, boy names, Nova. Nova.
Boy name? Nova. Nova.
Yes. And then after
he's
that.
Some nerd stuff like Magic the Gathering characters or something.
Here's one. Next in line is Thiago. T-H-I-A-G-O.
Thiago.
And that is tied with Luca. L-U-K-A. Maybe they've been watching The Godfather, Luca Brasi.
There was a Pixar movie that was Luca, too.
His name was Luca. That was a song, too.
All right, here's the largest decrease in popularity for female names. Jace, J-A-S-E, has gone down in popularity. Next, who the hell would name their kid Alexa? That's a decrease in popularity. Alexa. Next is Gavin. I thought that was a male.
A little speaker
name.
Out in the lobby just self-destructed.
The speaker in the lobby, speaker in the lobby is lighting up.
It is going off. Hi, Alexa.
Your broker.
Next is Michaela. That's always been a pretty name to me. And after that is Alyssa. So those are largest decrease in popularity.
There you have it.
Larry Connors, USA, is next from 6 to 8. And Larry is going to be talking about all the big issues of the day. And I'm going to find it here on my phone here. Larry's going to talk about the prime witness against Trump. Michael Cohen is a liar and suicidal. West Point War School blames Biden for civilian deaths. And not going to be politically correct, but there was a cat fight in Congress. You just heard it here on the Tim Dillon, the Chris Harp Show. You've been listening to us on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Drive safe and have a great weekend.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.